120,000 households in Northern Ireland about to get a big financial shock. They'll have their tax credit payments cut as a result of the July budget. An official analysis by the Department for Social Development suggests the average loss per household will be £918 per year. Tax credits are effectively a means-tested benefit paid to people on lower incomes. They're paid to two main groups: unemployed people with children and low-paid working people who may or may not have children. So do you receive tax credits? What would the loss of £918 a year mean to you? Let us know what you think on the number 03030805555. Our business and economic editor John Campbell is here this morning. He can give us more details. So, explain these figures first of all to us, John. What this actually means when you cut down into it?
Well, if you think about tax credits, usually the way you think of them is a top up for people who are on low wages. So you might not be earning that much money, and the government through the tax system gives you a little bit extra on top of your wages. Now, because Northern Ireland is a low pay economy, essentially, we have lots and lots of people on tax credits. About 160,000 households receive tax credits. That's probably more than one in six households get these tax credits. In the July budget, the Chancellor said he wanted to reduce the UK's welfare bill by a total of about £12 billion. One of the ways he's going to do that is to really reduce tax credits. So what we've got now is an official analysis which shows the impact in Northern Ireland. And that says 121,000 households will see a reduction in their tax credits. And that will come in from April 2016. The average loss is going to be about £918 per household. Because that's just a crude average, you could have some people who will lose a little bit and some who could actually lose quite a lot in terms of their tax credits. And so this impact, I think, for some households is going to be quite significant.
Has this shocked people? I mean, the impact, the figure, 120,000 households, was this expected?
Well, it was always expected the impact here would be big because we just have so many people on tax credits. And the theory behind it for the Chancellor is to say that low pay is a problem for business and it's up to business to tackle it. It's not up to the government to subsidise businesses to pay low wages. So the other side of the tax credit cuts is the Chancellor says, I'm increasing the threshold at which people start to pay income tax, so you can earn a bit more money without having to pay tax. And I'm also increasing the minimum wage for people over 25. That's something called the national living wage. So on the one hand, you've got the tax credit cuts. On the other hand, you don't start paying tax until you earn a little bit more. And also, if you're over 25, there's a higher minimum wage. So he thinks that should balance the two.
Will it bridge the gap?
I mean, well, it won't. That's the problem, I think, for many households. There's been some research done by a body called the Institute for Fiscal Studies, and they are like the UK's top number crunchers, the best pointy heads when it comes to looking at this sort of stuff. And they said, on their calculations, it's only going to fill about 13% of the gap which is left by the cut in tax credits. So many households, even with the changes to minimum wage, even with the changes to the tax system, they're still going to lose kind of quite a whack of money through the tax credits.
Mm. In terms of the business sector, I mean, what are they saying to you, John? How are they going to respond, especially what the Prime Minister's saying?
Well, one of the things the business sector at the minute is quite worried about is this national living wage, this new minimum wage for the over 25s. Now, we've had a minimum wage for getting on for 20 years. That's been kind of quite carefully managed through something called the Low Pay Commission. What's happening in April really is a big bang effect where suddenly there's quite a steep increase in the minimum wage for over 25s, and particularly those businesses which employ a lot of people on relatively low wages, that's like retail, hospitality and social care, they're a bit concerned because they're saying, well, yeah, it's our workers should be properly rewarded, but then suddenly we're having this extra cost imposed upon us, and what's it going to mean for us? And there was actually some research done at the time the Chancellor announced the national living wage, which said that about 60,000 jobs across the whole of the UK could be lost as a result of this. And I think some businesses which are only just surviving might think, well, suddenly we've got this extra cost imposed upon us. What are our choices here? Either we're going to have to increase prices, which we can't do because of competition. We're going to have to let people go, or we might just end up going out of business. So there's a lot happening in the labour market at the moment around low pay and how we tackle low pay. But certainly for many people, tax credits is going to be a big issue for them over the next couple of years, and how they deal with the reduction in their tax credits.
And of course, people will be concerned about this, and before they lift the phone and start blaming the MLAs, there's nothing they can do about this. Absolutely nothing.
Important thing to realise about tax credits is it's part of the benefits and welfare system, which is not controlled by Stormont. As the name suggests, it's controlled by the taxman, HMRC. So although Stormont hasn't agreed on welfare reform, there's all this wrangling about what sort of welfare system we're going to have, the tax credits thing is happening come what may. These changes are going to happen in April because they aren't under Stormont's control.
OK, John, thanks for that. We'll discuss this a little bit further. The Bangor businessman and member of the Northern Ireland Conservatives, Frank Shivers, is on the phone. Also, the journalist, Brian Pellin. Good morning to you both. Frank, what's your reaction to this? I mean, 120,000 families who are going to be almost £1,000 worse off.
Well, yes, that's certainly the headline, Joel. And John's interpretation there, I think, is potentially a bit misleading as well.
John's here. I mean, why do you feel that?
I don't agree with the sums, because if people...
They're not my sums. They're the Institute of Fiscal Studies sums. They're NISRA's sums.
Okay, if you let me speak, I'll explain why I don't agree with them. Basically, by 2017, there'll be 103... The Conservative government are hoping to take 103,000 people that'll pay no income tax in Northern Ireland, absolutely zero, which will equate to about £825. Now, with the additional
Brian, just higher, one point on that. RDK. If you already don't pay income tax, raising the income tax threshold doesn't help you.
Yes, but if your RD pay is going up quite dramatically, and I have a sort of a two hat approach to this, but I'm a businessman, and I am quite concerned about the introduction of the basic minimum wage going up so dramatically, and it will create problems for a lot of businesses, including my own. But surely that is an aspiration, that we get people off benefits, we get them into work where they're earning a decent wage and they're paying lower taxes. Is that not everybody's aspiration?
That's great, yes. But the issue is that if you're already at a level where you don't pay income tax, raising the tax threshold doesn't help you. So there's the distributional impact here, is that those who are kind of quite low down the distributional impact, they don't earn very much already. Raising the tax threshold doesn't help them, but reducing tax credits gives them a disbenefit.
Yes, but they will still have their benefit. Still have a benefit if they're only working a certain amount of hours. The increase, if they're working 16 hours and it increases by an hourly rate, there's an offset of that, and they won't be paying any tax at all. So there's a benefit there straight off.
David Cameron says he wants to stop this merry-go-round of welfare payments that mean that low wages are topped up by the state. I mean, what's your reaction to that, Frank, in terms of asking almost sort of businesses to up the ante in terms of what they're paying their employees?
Well, again, I mean, as a Conservative, yes, I would welcome that. As a member of the Conservative Party, that's been our policy right through, getting people off benefits, into work, earning a livable wage, and standing on their own two feet.
But as a businessman, what are you saying?
As a business person, I would say, I would hope, and I'm involved in a number of business organisations, and we would hope that potentially there'll be some tax cuts for businesses to allow this to happen, or some incentive phasing it in.
But the Chancellor said that the Chancellor says the incentive is that he's cutting corporation tax, so that's the incentive he's already introduced alongside the National Living Wage.
Well, that will certainly encourage larger businesses to come into Northern Ireland and help the economy. That will drive further jobs, hopefully better paid jobs.
Does it help you?
it does, yes, because at the end of the year, if we make profit, we pay less tax on that profit. It helps all businesses if they're paying less tax on at the end of the year.
Brian Pellin, what do you make of what you've heard?
I'm not surprised. I mean, once Osborne outlined these figures in his budget, it was quite obvious that a lot of people were going to be hit by it. And now we're seeing this actually taking place. And a lot of families this morning who already are struggling on low budgets, low pay, benefits, etc., are saying they're going to see their income reduced further. And those families are sitting now and digesting this news, and some of them may not have heard the news, or some of them may only realise it when they actually see the reduction in their income coming in, and then they're going to be really worried about how they're going to pay, etc. This is a hit on working class families, and this is before the Stormont House Agreement, if they do manage to bring in an agreed position on welfare reform. I hope they don't. But if they do, they will actually then hit families even more because of the specific situation that people in Northern Ireland live. But, and when people, and just one last point. When people talk,
I just want to pick up on your point about saying you hope they don't agree. I mean, it's not as if it's just going to be sort of parked there and left to float along. What Westminster will implement the changes anyway?
Okay, if Westminster implement the changes, what should people do if Westminster implement those changes? Well, then working people, I would imagine, throughout the length and breadth of Northern Ireland, the same as people in the Republic of Ireland who are suffering austerity-led programmes, will have to organise against this. We've already seen a reflection of people's anger in the vote for Jeremy Corbyn, where all the commentators thought it was a no hope, and Jeremy Corbyn, on a wave of popular resentment about these economic positions, voted in Corbyn, absolutely destroyed the three Blairites who stood against them. So that was just a reflection in Britain of what people thought then about that issue. And that took people by surprise. So there is a lot of people out there at the moment who are looking. And a while back, you had the trade union movements going up, etc., the Stormont, and they were arguing that Stormont should be saved. And I was thinking to myself, is that really the position the trade union movement should be adopting in this moment in time? When in March, they had a major trade union rally, which was opposed to the Stormont agreement. And that seems to have sort of disappeared off the radar at the moment. People are looking for a lead on these positions. But the reality is, the magazine that I produce, called View, we produced a magazine recently about child poverty. Over 100,000 children in Northern Ireland are living in poverty. Those figures are backed up by stats. Now, all these impacts on working-class people are going to be made worse. And just one last point on this. You keep talking about the living wage doesn't apply to anybody under 25. All those young people are condemned to a life of poverty then. All those young people on zero hour contracts, etc. It's like, it's over 25. But what about the under 25s? What about young people just coming out of university, getting into a job, etc.? They're going to be absolutely economic. I mean, the situation is worse now for young people than when I was growing up, or at least I got a grant to go to university. It wasn't very much, etc. And now people are, and that's, the figure's like £30,000. I think the economic model is unsustainable.
Okay.
It's up for people to say, we've had enough of this. We have to take a stand against this.
Let Frank Shivers respond to that. Frank?
Well, what I would say is the incentive for young people would be to go out and get a job because there's bigger wages to be had and lower taxes to be paid.
What does Frank think about zero-hour contracts? Does he think that's a good thing?
As an employer, yes, I'm 100% behind him. What happens?
As an employer, but what is a worker? What do you give a worker who's sitting by the phone, who doesn't know how long they're going to be working, what days they're going to be working, what hours? You think that's a good way for young people as a future to have a zero-hour contract?
That certainly doesn't happen, I would imagine, for a large proportion of employers. They take these people on, it gives them jobs, and if the business is not doing so well, and would you rather that they cut some hours or go bust? Because that's the reality of it. The zero hours contract gives the flexibility for the employer to take on people who potentially they would go, well, I can't really take them people on a full time contract. But then things get better and they do get the full time hours. Is that not better than no hours?
But you see, sorry, Frank, to cut across you, Brian, but Frank, with 20% youth unemployment, a lot of people suffering at the moment will be listening to that and saying, is that the best the Northern Ireland Conservatives can offer? Go and get a job.
Absolutely not. The Conservatives offer a range of things for Northern Ireland. The unfortunate thing is that Stormont, they get bogged down in the Stormont process. Welfare reform is part of the agreement, the Stormont House agreement, has been bogged down. That'll help people. That'll bring people out.
Yeah,
that'll get jobs. That'll get the economy going.
Yeah, but the comments say, with a 20% youth unemployment rate, to say that the answer is the answer for our young people is go and get a job. And it's almost as if if they walk out down the street, there are thousands of these jobs just waiting for them.
Well, there's certainly a lot of jobs. There's certainly a lot of jobs out there that potentially people can go and get. The problem, I think, is that the bridge between working and getting benefits is so small that a certain amount of people go, well, there's no point. So what the Conservatives are doing, you've asked me what they're offering, is they're offering higher wages, a higher per hour salary and lower taxes. So that is an incentive to get out, earn more money and pay less tax. And that's what they're doing.
Brian, you're saying about sort of people power and people rising up against austerity. If that's the case, why did Labour lose the last election?
Labour lost the last election because of perception amongst people, because of their programme and because they're in opposition, and it's always different when they're in opposition. There was perception, I think, amongst a lot of people. For a start, a lot of people just didn't vote in the election. Just didn't actually vote in the election. Large waves of working class people didn't vote in the election. And that's some of the reckoning of Osborne when these things are calculated and thought out, that the poor don't vote. So we can bring these changes in.
But if ever there was an issue, that would have brought people out to vote who usually don't vote, your argument, austerity would have been that case, that example.
Yeah, I think so.
As I've already said, the indication were, and it surprised all the political pundits, we're all surprised by it. You know, there's a lot to play out there. I have no idea how it goes. I'm a journalist. I'll watch it with keen interest. I don't know how the whole Corbyn movement in Britain is going to go, etc., how it's going to develop. Corbyn's going to make a speech today, etc. But that shift, which was totally in contrast to what happened during the general election, when people perceived, there was a perception that maybe the economy's improving, etc., etc. But all the figures are that Britain is still lagging behind in the world economy, as economy grows, etc.
That's just not true. The mainland UK economy is growing. The problem we've got is the Northern Ireland economy isn't matching that growth because of the stifled processes that we have here.
Okay, I want to bring Gregory Campbell in on this also as well. If you're listening to this and you think you're going to be affected by this, 0-30-30-80-55-55. Gregory Campbell, I mean, you voted against the tax credit cut. Do you feel this is a significant setback for hard-working families, but you're kind of helpless on this?
Yes, I do. Joel, most MPs in Northern Ireland did. I think there were a few. I think Danny Kinahan abstained and Lady Sylvia Herman voted against, but all the rest of us, voted in favour. The rest of us voted against.
Did Sammy Wilson vote on this?
Sammy wasn't present, but if he had been, he would have voted against. Every DUP MP.
So he wasn't there either.
There voted against. So he did. And the issue, I think, is a bit more stark than some of your contributors have been outlining.
Dolores Kelly has said to cut such a significant sum from low-income households will shunt countless families further into poverty and leave thousands destitute. Is that how you read it?
Well, whatever about the stark language, the situation is dire because immediately after the vote, I went into the House of Commons Library and I said to them, look, I want you to give me projections for next April based on a Northern Ireland average income, which is about £21,000 per year gross, and a Northern Ireland average family size, which is two children, one adult at least working. And their projections, which I have contained in my press release, which was released 7 days ago, unfortunately the BBC didn't pick up on it, shows that about £2,000 was going to be lost by that average family.
They were different figures. I mean, these aren't BBC figures, to be fair. These are the official figures from the Department for Social Development, presumably signed off by Mervyn Storey before he resigned.
I think the distinction is this, that the average family which is currently earning or receiving a working tax credit may well be earning less than the Northern Ireland average salary, and therefore their potential loss is less than the average family.
So what can you do? What are you going to do about it? What can you do about it?
Well, in the short, I mean, there's no point in anyone building up big hopes here in the short term. We simply, because it's not a devolved matter, we simply cannot change this matter in the short term. What we have to do is to ensure that the Conservative government understands that this is not an acceptable way to proceed in the longer term. And we have to apply pressure to the current government to try and ensure that they change course in the medium term. They're not going to change course between now and April, but we've got to try and ensure that when the impact becomes clear on working families, and remember, this is an impact on working families. This is not shysters or people who are avoiding work. This is an impact, a very severe impact, on either between £900 or £1,900 a year on people who are going out to work and try and better themselves.
Yeah, but realistically, I mean, what's the likelihood of the Conservative government changing course, even in the medium or long term?
Well, the only likelihood is when they see the kickback that there is in their own constituencies and in other constituencies, and the political realities come home to that party that's currently in government. That's the only way a government changes course. And if they start losing by-elections, if they start getting pressure applied to them, there's then the prospect of that course being abandoned. And they've done it before. They've done it with the poll tax. They've done it in other issues. So we have to apply the pressure and get the Conservatives to change course.
Mark's on the line this morning in Newton Arch. Morning, Mark.
What about you, Joe? How are you?
Very well. Go on ahead, Mark. What's your point?
Well, I just wanted to complain about losing the tax credits, sir. You know, it's going to affect my family. You know, I'd have to cancel a golf membership, man. I'm not going out for a pint of soda.
So, the optional extras that you have. I mean, how much do you feel it will affect you? If you were £1,000 worse off.
Well, that would pay my golf membership and get me out for a pint. So, you know, that's going to affect my lifestyle.
Dreadful for you, Mark. Thanks for that. That's a great opener. David's in Belfast. Morning, David.
Good morning, Joe. Well, let me tell you something. It's very seldom I agree with the Tory government, but on this issue, I'm 100% behind them. Why should single people pay their taxes and taxes and taxes to keep families and bigger families every single time? These people have a choice. And at the end of the day, I don't believe the taxpayer has any right to give these people more money or any kind of money. They brought the families in, they look after them. Simple as that.
Brian Pelham?
Your last two comments are, there's nothing I could say, but that, I mean, you know, they're welcome to those opinions, but the people who are struggling, they must feel like, when people talking about their golf club members...
To be fair to Mark, I think Mark's a wind-up merchant, so I wouldn't take that overly seriously. But David's making a point where he's making a serious point.
We either have a society, and basically we look at it like that, under the present economic model that we live in, we either have a society that looks after the poor, the unemployed, etc., that actually has mechanisms in place to look after those people and also to create full employment for people, so people have jobs at proper wages with futures that they can look forward to, that they can plan, etc. We either have that society as a model. You either believe in that as a model of a society you want to live in, or you want to live in the laws of the jungle.
Sorry,
you can't have a society that for people that are, who are not working, who are not going out to work on a daily basis, get benefits up and above people who are actually physically going out on a daily basis and working.
Well, there are many people who are working that this is going to affect.
Yes, but as I said, as we've said, with the cut of the income tax and the increase in the hourly rate, that is going to be bridged.
Well, Gregory Campbell seems to think that you know, in the medium term, this is going to come back and bite the Conservatives, and in the medium and long term, they're going to have to rethink this. I mean, what did you make of what he had to say on that?
Well, what I would say, basically, change the record, DUP and Sinn Féin. It's, you know, go back to the government, the bad government. At the end of the day, with devolved government here, who can't get their act together, put in the welfare reform. If it's that much of an issue in Northern Ireland, why doesn't Stormont get together and get a pot of money together? It's not as big a cut as what everybody's making it out.
It is if you're living and relying on it and about to lose a grand a year.
Well, if the jobs are, if we get an economic growth and Stormont get their act together and, you know...
So it's all their fault?
No, I don't think it's all their fault. A lot of the fault lies with Stormont, yes, because the economic growth in the mainland UK is rising dramatically. We're left behind because of the stagnant, stifling approach that we've got in Stormont. From businesses and outside and inside, there's no confidence to build a business, to employ people, to make jobs and to move the economy forward.
Sorry, just go ahead, David, before I let you go.
Rick, one of your guests said about the poor. Poor people are people who are severely disabled and CERS. They are people who have my 100% support. People have a choice to have 12 kids or one kid. It is their choice. The taxpayer has no right to pay for it.
I knew it would do it once. 0-30-30-55-55 if you agree or disagree with David this morning. By the way, while it was just mentioned there in terms of Stormont, we did ask Sinn Féin this morning for a comment, but they were unable to make anybody available because of the talks that are going on at the moment. John, if we can just bring you back in, you're flicking through some notes there as well. This idea where Stormont does have a responsibility, and the point that Frank is making, in that the economy is growing at a much faster rate in the mainland UK than what it is here, and therefore they have to take some of the responsibility.
Yeah, well, there have been massive long-term historical structural problems with the Northern Ireland economy, which I needn't bore you with now, which means that our growth rate has historically tended to be lower than the UK, except that time when we had a property bubble and it all ended in tears. But clearly the point is correct. If Northern Ireland wants to have a more generous welfare system than the UK, if politicians are sufficiently concerned about the problem over tax credits and other benefits, then it's down to Stormont to legislate for that. And they can just come forward to their electorate and say, listen, we've decided that with our limited pot of money, our welfare system should be more generous, and therefore we are going to cut spending in these other areas and other in order to fund that. So that is the choice that Stormont has. We were nearly there in putting something together with that in Stormont House. That's now fallen apart. So it's up to the politicians at Stormont to say, here's our alternative. And as yet, we haven't seen one.
OK, still plenty to come on this. 0-30-30-80-55-55. John, thank you very much for your time as ever. Busy day ahead for you. Plenty more to come on BBC Newsline, I'm sure.